For any of your shopping at Amazon.com, please go to our website first, MysteriousTopics.com, and click on our link to Amazon. And in that way, you'll be supporting our podcast moving forward, and we appreciate that very much. Welcome to Mysterious Topics. This is John, and today I'm joined by Lisa Franz from Arizona, who suggested the topic of the Stardust Ranch. Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
So, how did you find out, first of all, about the Stardust Ranch? I know you live in that area.
Right. So, first I heard it on two different podcasts. The gentleman, John Enbids, had been interviewed about his story living on Stardust Ranch. And I guess it really intrigued me because, unlike other stories I've heard, this one is kind of nearby to where I live. So that made it really intriguing to me and also terrifying.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, have you ever been there or have you driven by or anything like that?
I have driven by, and I have a family member that lives in the area. And so I also shared this story with her, and she drives by it quite frequently, so it really scared her as well.
Yeah, so she hasn't gone over there at night to,
no.
see, to see anything.
So, no.
Well, so she lives fairly close. Has she ever seen anything at night that's unusual?
She hasn't, though she's not as interested in the topic as much as I am, and so she kind of doesn't go out looking for that type of thing.
Okay, well, yeah, but if you happen to see something like that,
you might
become more interested.
Right.
Okay, so then you heard about the topic, and the only real problem I have with this whole thing is that there's very little information from anywhere else other than what the person who owns the ranch, John Enbids, is his name, I believe?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you found out much other information other than what he has put out?
Well, there is a website called UFOconspiracy.com, and there was some reports that he had submitted to a Dr. Levengood, who's famous for studying crop circles.
Yes.
And on that website, they had a response from someone in Dr. Levengood's office about the samples that they received. And John Enbids says that he had collected some samples of aliens and sent it to Dr. Levengood for analysis.
Yes, and I did see that, and well, we will get into that as we go, but maybe we should just start from the beginning, and why don't you tell us
what
you know of from the beginning.
Okay, so John Enbids and his wife were in need of a ranch property for their nonprofit Hopeful Hooves, which is an equine rescue facility for abandoned, starving, or severely abused horses. And this was in the early 1990s. And they said that they had looked around for a couple of years because they needed to find a place that was both close to the city, Phoenix, but they also needed to find the space. And they need to have it quickly accessible to the Phoenix metro area because they both worked in behavioral health. And so they found this ranch. However, John says his wife really had a bad feeling about buying the property, but he was really gung-ho and eager to purchase it. But he said from the get-go, from move-in, they experienced some weird things.
Yes, they certainly did from what I've read about it or heard about it. First of all, when they went to move in, apparently the people that they bought the ranch from were still there and everything was still in the house.
Right. So the occupants were gone, but all of their stuff was there. They hadn't moved out any of their personal belongings, any of their furniture. They had just kind of took off and left everything behind.
Yeah, that's pretty strange in and of
yes.
itself. And then they called the realtor and he said he would check into it. And then they came back at the end of the day, said everything was settled. And apparently all the objects that were in the house were now out in the pool.
Right. Yes, everything had been, I mean, from appliances to their personal belongings, furniture, were all dumped into the pool and then stacked as high as 3 to 4 feet outside of the pool. And he called the realtor, and the realtor came over, took some pictures, tried calling the former occupants. And I believe these were people that were renting the property, not the former owner. So it was a little bit harder for them to track them down. And so the realtor was never able to get in touch with them. And John ended up spending the rest of the weekend dragging everything out of the pool and putting it in front of the property, where just kind of people drove by and picked it up until it was all gone.
And they never really did say, at least I couldn't find anywhere, where they said, who put the contents in the pool?
Right, right. I never was able to find out who did it and how could you do that. Seems like an awful lot of work to do in 5 to 6 hours.
Yeah, and that's just crazy. And then apparently he ran into a person who was on his property.
Yeah, he said that the following Monday of move-in day, he described like a sunburned, long-haired, scraggly man dressed in cutoffs with an unbuttoned army shirt, sleeves cut off, a t-shirt underneath, and a big machete on a piece of leather hanging from his arm walking up the driveway. And John says he went out to meet him and asked him what he could do for him. And the guy responds, well, who are you? And John says, well, I just bought the property. And the stranger says, no, I know the people who live here and they gave me a job, and see that building back there. And he points to their new tack room, about a 600 square foot building. And he said, that's where I live. And John says, well, what's your responsibility here? And he says, well, I'm the guy who kills the monsters. I'm the guy who keeps everybody safe. And John asks, well, what monsters are you talking about? And, he says, oh, you don't know about the monsters? No, well, you're going to find out. And John replies he doesn't need the visitor's services. And the visitor says, well, you're going to be sorry you don't have me around to protect you. So this is, I think that's the first warning that something is going on here.
Yeah, that was a very odd encounter. And you have to remember, for people that haven't heard about this story before, it's a ranch. It's about 35 miles outside of Phoenix.
Right.
But it's not like there's next door neighbors real close by for somebody to come walking up the driveway with a machete.
Right.
You know, they just, yeah, it's just really odd.
Right, right. Especially so now it's become a little bit more populated, but they had moved in the late 90s. So they said that they had no neighbors, that there wouldn't really be anyone walking down the street, much less their driveway, without maybe living in the area or something. But there was really no reason for that guy to be out there.
Right. And as far as you know, as far as all that you could find on this, was there any indication given to them prior to purchasing the property that there was anything odd or unusual about it?
No, the only thing he mentions is, I mean, afterwards he finds out some history about it. But prior, just his wife saying that she had an odd feeling about it. But other than that, he hadn't had any history on the property.
Okay. So they get moved in. The strange visitor that said he was living on the property is gone. He doesn't come back. And then as they're going about their life, and how soon did things, do you know, did they start to happen?
He said, well, a week to 2 weeks after moving in, he says he starts seeing orbs. And the orbs seem to appear out of nowhere. They last a few minutes and then they blink out. He says that some are the size of a Greyhound bus. They change color. They had depth. They look three-dimensional. They almost look like there are tunnels with an opening to somewhere else on the property. Always appeared in groups of three.
And these orbs are just appearing outside in the air?
Yes, just outside. Yeah. And he said that he did capture them on video and he sent them to Village Labs. And Village Labs in Tempe, Arizona have analyzed the videos from the Phoenix lights, and they said that they were the same color, frequency, and temperature as the Phoenix lights.
Well, that's interesting, because you said what they moved in here in 1996 or somewhere
right
around that area, and the Phoenix lights were right around that same time, maybe a year later.
Right. I think 1990. Oh, yeah, about 96, about that same time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And he does have some of the images on a website that he has.
Right.
alienranch.weebly.com. And they're, you know, a little, some of them are a little blurry, but they definitely show in the night sky some odd colors.
Right, right. And he even said that he saw things coming, going in and out of them. He didn't observe them to be flares. And he did say that he did see F-16 and F-18s go out there and chase these orbs around the sky.
Oh, wow. That's pretty interesting. So the did they disappear when the planes showed up, or you know, did they run away or what?
I don't know. You know, to me, some of this, the way he describes them, sometimes I don't think it completely matches up, because then, you know, one part he says that they were motionless, but then he says that there's F-16 and F-18s that are kind of chasing them around. So they obviously are moving. So I think some of his description of the orbs kind of contradict themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's a very odd story to follow, to try to make any kind of sense in. But
right.
When you hear him speak, he doesn't sound like a guy that's particularly crazy or anything.
No,
it sounds like,
no.
Sounds in like fact, if opposite. You or I were to have this happen. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And what else?
Yeah. He seems very, I mean, he's a professional. He's educated. I mean, he sounds very straightforward, no nonsense. And that was another reason why the story really grabbed me, was because he seems completely normal, but he has this crazy, crazy story.
Yes. Which gets much crazier here as we go on. So, okay, let's continue. So he started seeing orbs after about a week or two. And then what?
Then he also observed large, these things that he calls them Brillo men. He observed large black or dark human-like figures walking around the desert. No distinguishable features, shadow-like, but have dimension. He describes them as being watchers. They walk through solid matter. They walk through their fences and gates. They don't stop to open them. They just walk right through. He said his older brother and his brother's son saw it, and they thought they were going to hurt the horses. So they started shooting at them, and the bullets went right through. And the dogs ran after them, but stopped 7 to 8 feet away. And they seemed to have perceived them as some sort of threat. And these Brillo men didn't seem to be afraid of the dogs.
Yeah. And so the description he gave of Brillo men said, because they looked like somebody made a man out of Brillo pads, but they had the figure of a person. I think they were pretty big, though, weren't they? Like 7 or 8 feet tall?
Yes. Yeah.
And, well, anyway, that's just really odd. So they were, but they were physical. In other words, they shot through them, and it didn't have any effect on them. And then, so the dogs chase them, but stop. So what do these things do? Do they just walk away?
They just walk away.
And they didn't disappear necessarily. They just walked away into the dark.
Right.
Okay. And, of course, that isn't the only odd thing that happened.
So then they also had experienced animal mutilation. They had 3 horses that were mutilated in the late 90s from 97 or 98, and they happened over a period of 3 years. They said that they were similar to cow mutilations. There was an evidence of a struggle, and it looks like that they are carved with what looked like to be a laser. Their hoofs were removed. Their eyes were removed. The anus was carved out. The sex organs were removed. They reported it to the sheriff. They had it all documented and photographed. And they said that the horses weren't loose. They had been penned in with a padlock, and they were surrounded by a fence that was 5 feet high. So they weren't easy to get to.
Yeah. And that's at that point when that was happening, the only strange figures he had seen to that point were these Brillo men.
Right.
And he must have been thinking they were the ones doing this, apparently.
I don't know. I haven't heard him say anything that he thought maybe it had something to do with the Brillo men. But I think from what I had read in that UFOconspiracy.com, they had said that they thought that it was the great aliens, which is another topic that happened.
Yes, but happened these here. Yes, and these are they show up at some point too.
Yes.
Do you know when he started seeing them for the first time?
I don't see him specifying a date as when it came on, but they said that they started experiencing gray aliens. They began showing up on their property and in their home, in their master bedroom and in their sunroom. And he described them as, you know, regular gray aliens with long necks and big heads and eyes. And they just seemed to move from place to place as displacing the air. And he had a samurai sword that he used to, I guess, protect himself from them. And on one visit, he had a physical altercation. And they showed up in groups of threes. And so his Rottweilers attacked one. He ran one through with his samurai sword, and he described a brown liquid that kind of spurted out. When he removed the sword, a grapefruit-sized piece of flesh came out. And then the third one, he said, just watched. And this is when he took the sword into the other room, took a plastic bag and pulled it off the end of the sword to put it in a glass bottle. And then he sent it to Dr. Levengood for analysis. They said after they received the information, approximately 6 months later, Dr. Levengood and his wife mysteriously died, according to John Edmonds. So I did kind of look to see if I could find anything online describing their death. And Glenna was aged 89, and she had been battling a long and serious illness per her obituary. And Dr. Levengood died at age 88. So they were, but with no record of cause of death. So they were, you know, in advanced age. So I don't know how suspicious a death it could be.
Yeah, I don't think it was, but he is well known, Dr. Levengood, for cattle mutilations. He started with that, and then later crop circles. So he is he is probably one of the few people who would actually accept material of this sort to look at.
Right. And he said that unless you take the head off the gray alien, they just kind of they disappear. So if you keep the head, you get to keep the prize. And he said that gray aliens would appear 2 to 3 times a week. And the Edmonds found holes in themselves. Skin and tissue samples were being taken, blood being taken from them. And he said that it progressed to them, the gray aliens assaulting his wife while in bed. He said he came to bed one night and found his wife levitating off the bed, and three aliens were touching her and trying to do things to her. And he took that sword and cut them to ribbons, and he was able to behead one. And then the body and head were removed from the property. And he said it was sent out of state to an organization for testing. And it's not on American property, but on the continental United States. But he couldn't say exactly where it's at.
Well, that would certainly indicate that it's probably either a Native American soil or some other government's property.
Yeah. And he said, you know, from that time on, his wife had begged to be handcuffed to the bed so that they couldn't take her away. So that was, and that's, I guess, the most troubling of all the experiences that he's had. That's the most troubling.
Yeah. Well, the most troubling for me is that he's running these things through with a samurai sword. I just wonder, and I know you can't answer this, that who started the violence there? Was it him or was it the Greys? You know, they could have been coming here thinking they were going to be friends, and this guy is slicing them up with a samurai.
Right.
So it's very odd.
Right. And then he also has experiences with ghosts there. He had a gentleman named Daniel Teague from Vegas Star Healings come out, and he wrote a report stating that this ranch has as many ghosts as an old museum. He said the Edmonds have about 500 ghosts on their property, 60 ET, and 3 long-term resident spirits. So, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on this property.
Yeah, certainly sounds like it. And he also claims that there are, he describes them as portals, 2 portals, one actually in his living room and the other one out on the property somewhere, where things can just kind of pop in and out, apparently.
Right.
From some other dimension, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's why all of these strange things are happening, because it's almost like they're just stopping by. They're just kind of popping in from another dimension for some reason.
And not only that, I mean, the area that he lives in, this is Rainbow Valley, Arizona. And this area is really interesting because it's kind of in the middle of all these different areas that people do see a lot of UFOs and extraterrestrials. If you've ever looked into the lore, there's some similarities to other things. So it's 25 miles south of Luke Air Force Base, which a lot of people think that our Air Force has something to do with like reverse engineering with UFOs. So that's in close proximity. It's 35 miles east of the Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station. It backs up to the White Tank Mountains, and it's north of the Estrella Mountain Park to the east, which is also a national preserve. It backs up to the State Trust land, the Sonoran Desert National Monument, and there's several cultural ruins from the Hohokam and other native peoples. And then he also says it's also on a large water.
Oh, yes. Underneath a water, like an aqueduct, right, or something underneath, right, the ground, apparently.
And yeah. And then there's also, because Rainbow Valley, they get a lot of lightning there. So there's also fulgurite, which is petrified lightning, which is also, you know, sometimes people, when discussing UFOs or ETs, they say that's something that brings aliens to that area. So he's got all these different combination of things happening in that area that would maybe bring these ETs to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That fulgurite is when lightning hits like sand some other material where it kind of melts it and turns it into a glass.
Right. Right. So it's an area of energy and a hotbed of ET. They're saying that Phoenix is a hotbed of ETs, and Arizona is very attractive to them. And Arizona in general has a lot of portals and gates and sacred places. So I think he's just kind of a magnet for it. It just happens that where he lives is a magnet for it.
Yeah, apparently. As you said in the first email you sent me, that mm-hmm. you're not sure if this guy is telling the truth or not.
Right.
But it's a really interesting story. But there is, of course, the story of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Right.
Which is very similar, and that's in Utah, I believe.
Right. Right. So this is what makes me question it, is that his property is for sale. He has it listed for $2.5 million. And he has had Robert Bigelow's team out, and Robert Bigelow I think he just sold Skinwalker Ranch, but he did purchase Skinwalker Ranch for the purpose of studying, investigating out from the Shermans. And so I wonder, like, was he trying to maybe make up the story to perhaps entice Robert Bigelow to purchase his property, like he had purchased Skinwalker Ranch? Could that be a reason for the story? Or
that's a very, very strong possibility, because I heard him say that he actually did get an offer from Robert Bigelow, but it was way below what he wanted.
Right.
And so that's what I was thinking. And now with Robert Bigelow, as you said, he was there for quite a few years with mm-hmm. a lot of people studying everything they could about what was happening at Skinwalker Ranch, which had similar and some other different things, almost like that invisible predator type thing running around the property.
It's right.
Some really bizarre stories. George Knapp wrote a book on it, and I can't remember the name of it, but he's excellent at everything
right.
he does in this area. And
yes.
So anyway, they studied that for years and they couldn't find much. So maybe he was thinking, well, I may buy another ranch to see, but he probably wasn't going to. You know, he's a billionaire. He's a smart guy. He's not going to get
right.
taken. So he probably, maybe he saw something or sent people there to check it out, and it wasn't really worth looking into for him.
Right, right. Yeah. So, and then maybe, I mean, he did write a book about his experiences too. So that could be their, you know, money-making idea of trying to, because he does have this, you know, not-for-profit organization. Maybe a way of supporting himself or supporting the ranch. I mean, who knows? And I mean, I, you know, from my own personal feelings, I would love for it not to be true, because this is terrifying.
Yeah, it would be to have supposedly things from other dimensions coming in at a location fairly close to where you live. That would be a little unsettling.
Right.
Now, the only thing, as you said before, that he calls physical evidence was this tissue that mm-hmm. he supposedly was on the knife after he ran it through one of them, and a big chunk of it, he said, the size of a grapefruit or something like that.
Right.
So he had saved that and put it in the freezer and eventually sent it to this Dr. Levengood, who we spoke of already in Michigan. And he did get a report back from Dr. Levengood, which is interesting. And
right.
So I don't know if I would like to, I'd have to see the document to see that it was actually written by Dr. Levengood and everything. But
right.
It does say that the sample appears to be pure hemoglobin, like that found in at the cattle mutilation sites.
Right.
And what appears to be segmented rods in the blood. And he claims he's never seen anything like it. So anyway, Dr. Levengood, according to this report, was saying that he sent the samples to a couple other labs without telling them what it was. And he said all came back with the same result, that the proteins in the samples could not be identified as anything they had seen before, either plant or animal or human. One lab did add that the samples sent to them did match the samples that they had tested over the last 30 years of fluid specimens they had tested from various cattle mutilations across the southwest U.S. They believe that there was 100% compatibility, that the two were from the same creature. And then Dr. Levengood said, finally, a smoking gun that absolutely links cattle mutilations to alien life forms. Well, maybe, maybe not. We don't know that this actually came from an alien life form other than John Edmonds saying that that's where it came from.
Right.
So anyway, it is some sort of possibly significant evidence, though.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So are there any other details of the story that we may have missed?
Well, I guess the history of the property. So, I mean, in addition to the location, there it does have a kind of wild history to it.
And what's that?
So when they were getting settled into their home, they called the telephone company to set up their service, and no one would show up. So they would reschedule, and the telephone company had said, you know, we can't get anyone to come out. And after some coercion, he was able to make another appointment, and a guy shows up and he's shaking. And the telephone serviceman says, "You don't know about this place, do you?" And he told him some of the history of the location. So the ranch was built in 1977. They started with bare ground. They built all the buildings, and when it was time to move in, the owner's wife said, "No, the place is creepy." Which I'd like to say, point out that funny that, you know, his wife and John Edmonds' wife and this wife who of the owner who built the ranch both had a feeling that this place was creepy. And she said, "I'm going to divorce you if you force me to move in here." So the owner put it up for sale.
So the guy that built it knew, actually never right. lived there.
Right, right. Based on his wife's recommendation.
Well, she was obviously really smart to yes. force him to do that.
She put her foot down.
Yeah. I bet you if she gets this story online, she'll look yeah. at her husband and say, "See, I told you so."
Right. So the next people who bought it were a family from Mexico who were ranchers, and they did pretty well on this property. They're very successful. Unfortunately, though, their son committed suicide by shooting himself the day before his high school graduation, and the family just kind of fell apart and they moved away. It went up for sale and they sold it to a bunch of men who used it for like a militia and a biker gang hangout, and they had run-ins with the local police and the sheriff, and then eventually it was abandoned. Then it became a location for a whorehouse and off-track betting. The phone guy had pointed out to him that there were 27 phone lines running into the building, and most homes don't have 27 phone lines. and then the previous owners before them, before the Edmonds bought it, out of bankruptcy, and they used it as an investment property. So they, you know, fixed it up and painted it and sold it. So it does have a background to it, and not a pretty background.
Yeah, but there were no reports of anything this crazy going on until the Edmonds got there. So that lady, the wife of the guy that built it, had a bad feeling about it, but there was never anything happening to verify her feelings.
Right.
So that's interesting that she would pick up on that. So and so did John's wife, but she still said, you know, let's go ahead and move in, apparently.
Right. She was able to, she followed him. And, you know, thinking if I was in that situation, I think I would act as the first woman. I would say, no, I'm not moving. You know, if I have a bad feeling, I'm not doing it. But I mean, everyone's experiences are different. Maybe she felt like she couldn't say no, but I just know if I woke up and there was three gray aliens in my bedroom, I would hightail it out of there. I would get out there as fast as possible.
Yeah, I don't know how I would deal with that either, but I do know he said that they were looking for a ranch. They wanted to open a horse rescue ranch for several years, and they couldn't afford all of the ranches. And all of a sudden, this one they discovered, and it was one that they could afford. Now, maybe they should have looked a little further into it as to why they could afford this one. And they're almost kind of stuck there now because they had a decision to make. They could try to hide this and then sell the ranch and get out from under it, or just talk all about it and hope that somebody would buy it for that reason, I guess.
And even on the MLS listing, they do have an attachment that says that this home was featured on, I think it was Ghost Adventures, and that, you know, it does have some experience with the paranormal. I mean, they're very open about it and sharing it with whoever, you know, may be interested in purchasing it. So they are very open about it.
Yeah, and they even appeared on a podcast of a guy that talks just about real estate in the Phoenix area.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
It is called the Valley of Sun Real Estate podcast. And the Valley of Sun Real Estate show, I don't know the person's name, the guy's name that did it, but it was just kind of interesting to hear him talking with John, and his wife both were on there talking about their experiences in the house.
I'll have to listen to that. I haven't heard that, but I'll give that a listen.
And then there was another podcast, which there's a video of YouTube on where the person's talking with him, and supposedly one of these little grays peeks his head around the corner.
Did
you see that?
I did.
And it's really hard to tell what it was exactly. Right. So I don't know that that's any kind of proof. It's really hard to tell what it is. Something does kind of form on the edge of the doorway, but it's certainly not enough evidence to say, oh yeah, that's definitely an alien from another planet or dimension or something.
Could have been
this dog. Yeah. So I'm trying to think. There were other anomalies. Different kinds of anomalies that happened there, weren't there?
Yeah, another thing is they had a black triangle fly over their home. They've had a lot of, I guess, military presence there, magnetic anomalies. They go through a lot of car batteries, which, I mean, living in Arizona with the high heat, I think a lot of people have that issue going through a lot of car batteries. But they said that they have personal items disappearing. Oh, there are dogs floating across the room. Kangaroos hopping down the street. two Roman soldiers walking and talking came through their living room, like a 3D movie playing in their living room.
Well, that would be fascinating to have two Roman soldiers. I mean, that kind of brings in the whole time travel element and, you know, other dimensions. That's kind of interesting. And seeing your dog float across the living room would be something not normal either.
So, I mean, they've had things all across the board. I mean, I think if you were to mention something to them like, did you ever have this happen? He would say, oh yeah, that happened one time. I mean, I can't think of one thing. Oh, a black triangle. They said that he was chasing after a dog that had gotten away, and he came up to a black triangle that was about 65 feet away, and he felt an electric hum, tasted pennies in his mouth. The hair on his body stood up, and he blacked out and lost time for over an hour.
Yeah, so the black triangles are very possibly could be just experimental military crafts of some sort. But that just shows that if they are in that area, they know there's something unique about it too.
Right.
And there is this, he's got this image of what he says is a stone that's got a pattern cut out of the middle. It almost looks kind of like a starfish or something. That one of the aliens supposedly fell out of his hand when he kind of disappeared, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, have you seen the pictures of it? I mean,
yes. Oh, okay. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, it just looks too ordinary to me, I think.
And I can't even tell if it's a stone or not. It almost looks to me, I've seen things like this that artists or something have made for home decorations out of metal where they cut it out of the middle. So I don't know. I'd have to see it in person and to see if that's an actual rock that somehow was cut with maybe a laser or something out of that pattern, then yeah, that would be kind of interesting to know how that was done.
Right. And then they said that they would see squads of Apache attack helicopters fly 60 to 80 feet off the ground down the road in the early evening on drones. And he speculates that maybe they're just trying to keep the UFOs in their sight. So there's a definite military presence around there.
But if this were some sort of a thing that the military was aware of that was a hazard, I just can't see why the military would just let a person just buy that piece of property. You would think when it was for sale, they would have had somebody buy it for, you know, so that they would have ownership of it where they could then control it.
Right.
So, yeah, this is a very suspicious story, I guess, is the best way to say it.
And then I guess it all comes to a head. He said that he starts trying to fight back. In 2011, he had a woman from Phoenix come out and said she was going to bring some positive ETs to kind of get control of the situation. She brought out 3 ETs physically and a couple beamed in remotely. So this is, I mean, if the story isn't wild enough, this is where it gets really wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and supposedly these ETs look just like regular people.
Right.
So you couldn't even hardly tell. But then, and then he says something to the effect of that they proved to him somehow that they were alien.
Yeah, he said.
Yeah, go ahead.
He said he saw a large, so when the meeting was over, they walked out of the house and they saw a large spaceship that was in the sky as big as a football field. They brought in items of large black blocks of gold, orbs, various different stones, which is that stone you were talking about that turned warm and lit up when touched. They're all wearing swords. They were Palladian and Andromedan ETs. He said that when it was time for them to go, the 3 ETs held up their swords up in the air and they summoned the large spaceship, and it affected the weather. A large monsoon with lightning came. And there were thousands of other ships, and that they just all kind of beamed up.
So who made contact, and how did they make contact with the good aliens?
So there was a woman, and from what I've heard, he doesn't say who this woman is. He just says it in 2011, a woman from Phoenix came to him and told him that she could bring some positive ETs, but he never says who this woman is or how he. Oh, well, I guess she came to him, and I don't know how she knows these ETs.
Well, that's what I want to know is if this person happens to be listening, please send me an email. I'd like to know how to contact the good ones.
Yeah, right. And then there's this talk, you know, with the aliens that they're going to try to go public with this in the near future. But that was in 2011, and here we are in 2016, and nothing's, you know, come of it. So who knows?
Yeah, I know. Well, the whole thing is crazy. It's just a whole crazy story. It's like every single anomaly is thrown into one story just about, which doesn't mean that it just makes it all totally unbelievable. I really think that a lot of these mysterious topics we talk about here are related in some right. fashion. So that part of it somewhat makes sense. But again, this whole story of the Stardust Ranch is just coming from one person.
Right.
And the only evidence is coming from that one person. And he says there is physical evidence, but again, it's all coming from him. And even those reports mm-hmm. From a Dr. Levengood, you could type up a report and say you got it from Dr. Levengood. So I don't know. I'd have to right. know that it actually came from him.
Yep. So yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's definitely interesting. And like we had said in the beginning, I mean, he sounds completely credible, and his background makes you believe he is a credible person, and he sounds of sound mind.
Yeah, it's, well, he was a mental health right, counselor.
Right.
So presumably right. he had his faculties about him, hopefully.
Right. And
well, so here's a question. Because obviously the only way to really know the legitimacy of the story would be to visit the ranch, be invited out there and to
right.
actually see it for yourself. If he were to do that, invite you to see that, would you want to go?
No.
Yeah, I know. I would think twice about it myself. I would have to see it for myself. But on the other hand, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, because of its, proximity to me, I do. I mean, and my relative lives nearby. I mean, I there have been a couple times where I'm going to visit that relative, and I think, maybe I could go, do a quick stop, drive by. I don't even want to drive by the place. It makes me sick to my stomach. I mean, even coming on the podcast to talk about it, I'm like, am I somehow inviting this into my life? As much as this topic intrigues me, I don't want to know for certain that it's real. I don't really want to have an experience.
And or just driving by if one of those portholes happens to be
right.
moved out on the road and you drive into it and
right.
and you're in some other dimension and you can't get
right.
out. Yeah, that would be
yeah.
that would not be good. It would definitely be fun to just to see something. It wouldn't take much for me to be out there to see. I'd see one thing and I'd realize, yeah, you know what you're talking about. I'm going to go now.
And right. But the other thing is that this has happened over 2 decades. So, we're condensing the story into an hour, but, because he has his organization there and it seems like he has the general public come out and with these hopeful hooves, and these people aren't saying that anything's happening. So, I mean, I think we're like I said, we're condensing this down into 1 hour, but this is happening over a period of 2 decades and or maybe 3 decades now. So it's not happening. It doesn't seem like it could be happening every day. This is drawn out over a long period. So if you're driving by or, if you're invited, then maybe the likelihood of something happening while you're there is less and might not happen.
Yeah. And as Robert Bigelow found out at the Skinwalker Ranch, when you start setting up a bunch of sophisticated equipment to measure, to test, to see if he can figure out what's going on, then all of a sudden the anomaly seems to die down.
Right. Yep.
So, yeah, it is. It's an enigma. And I really feel for the guy if this is all true.
Right. I know. And I'm trying to get people to believe you. I mean, the story is out there, and trying to get someone to listen to him or share his story with must be really, really hard.
Yeah, it is literally an unbelievable story. And as I said, the only way for you to actually even start to think that there's some truth behind it is to actually go out and see it for yourself.
Right.
It's really the only way. Nothing's
right.
going to happen to prove it to everyone. You'd
right.
have to. Everybody would have to be there physically to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, there's probably a lot of our listeners that would go right now if they got
right.
invited. And then there's probably even more of our listeners that would say, "I just keep me away from that location."
Right.
So, So, all right. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to add to this topic?
The only other thing is that both he and his wife, they say that they've experienced some health issues because of this, but they seem to be recovering now.
Yeah, I remember hearing him talk about it. Supposedly, he claims that he has something in his genetic makeup that is able to repel whatever it was. He said that the aliens gave him some sort of debilitating illness.
Right.
But that his wife is still struggling with some sort of serious illness, apparently.
Right. So, again, another reason why I don't want to go out there. I don't want to get some sort of debilitating illness. But, yeah, that's it. That's not enough.
That's enough. Yeah. It's quite an amazing story. So, anyway, I want to thank you very much for talking with me about it today.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been great. I'm glad to have you. You did a great job.
Thank you.
All right. Well, for more on this topic and others, you can visit our website, mysterioustopics.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.